So now is public comment. We have four people scheduled to be with us. Catherine Carter, Effective Methods of Identifying Vision Disorders in Students. Is Ms. Carter here? Thank you. Let me just read this. Comments are limited to 3 minutes per speaker. Time will be monitored through the use of a timer. When time expires, speakers will be permitted to complete a sentence but shouldn't make further comments. Board members will take all comments under advisement but will not respond. Written statements and other materials can be submitted to Dr. Simpson, who will see that all board members receive copies of your comments. So you have 3 minutes. Thank you so much for being with us.
My printer ran out and then there was a 2-hour delay, so I didn't make all copies of this.
You are welcome to, if you need to do something in the future, to send your documents later.
I will do so.
Thank you.
Is it on?
Please hold.
I don't want to break
it out.
We're just going to get megaphones for the next meeting.
Tin can telephones.
I swear, as a teacher, I always broke the printer, too.
There we go.
Okay. Thanks. I was always the teacher who broke the copier before the next teacher. So my name is Catherine Carter. I am a mom of five and a traumatic brain injury survivor from a fall, and also a vision and concussion advocate as a result of my son's story. I worked on legislation last session, the Atticus Act. You can see his picture at the top. That's my son. And I'm here to tell you how you can improve the school vision program in your schools to identify students, because we need to ensure students who are visually impaired can see clearly. And if we expect a child to learn, then we should make sure that they can see what we are teaching. We did not discover that my son was visually impaired until he was 10 and started begging for glasses. He has 20/20 acuity. We came to find out that he had double vision and had it his whole life, and we had no idea. He was misdiagnosed as ADHD. Between that and my fall and becoming visually impaired and unable to read for about a year and a half, I also came to realize that that one in four students have a vision disorder, one in 20 preschoolers, and one in five Head Starts. And that vision is the leading indicator of success in a student. So as a result of my efforts, the school told me that my son was not visually impaired, that double vision was not a visual impairment. I came to find out that was done in violations of IDA, and I wrote a state complaint. And my school district was found out of compliance, and actually multiple other school districts. It was pretty much all of them, but I kind of stopped investigating after the tornado hit my house. I also contacted the U.S. Department of Ed, OSAP, and a memorandum was sent out after my contact this year, May 22nd, 2017, to recognize all visual impairments, not just acuity, because these children were being denied for years, not only in this state, but across the United States. And these are impairments that can result from a traumatic brain injury like me, underlying neurological issues. And these children were told that they were not visually impaired and were denied services. So, though I'm working on bills, two vision bills with lawmakers for the session, and then one with delegates, three other ones, they've asked for my help on concussions and vision. But I was part of the Maryland State Vision Screening Committee, and based out of that and my research that I have done, there are simple things you can do to identify children quickly and effectively and cheaply that are being done in other states and other programs. Simple things such as a parent questionnaire on the symptoms of vision, so the parent can start realizing if their child is an at-risk group. I have a child in Child Find receiving services, my 2-year-old. Only one question was asked on vision. Do you think your child's visually impaired? Vision is the number one disability. 70% of special ed are visually impaired. So this gives you a layout of how to fix this problem cost effectively, and it's being done in other states, and I'd like to see it done here.
Thank you so much. We appreciate it.
I'm sorry, President Samara, I'm not going to respond because I know we're not supposed to, but I couldn't hear something that she said that was a very important word to me.
Sorry.
to explain, so I just wanted to clarify. Is that all right?
Sure.
Okay, you said that throughout the process, the decision was that your your local was in or out of compliance. And then you said all of the other state, all of the other LEAs were as well. So I could not hear whether it was in or out, and that's kind of a big point.
There was a letter released after, because of my state complaint. MSDE asked, I told them that other counties were out of compliance with federal law by excluding non-acuity visual impairments. They've been doing it for decades. And this memorandum was sent out July 18th, 2016 to all 24 school districts because I kept finding more and more out of compliance in the state.
And you'll give us a copy of that as well, although I think we probably voted on it.
Yes, and I can give you the copy of the OSEP letter memorandum that was sent to all 50 state directors that I had requested. So now state laws are changing as well as school districts across the United States.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for the clarification.
Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Guyton. Dr. Dantzis, Algebra 1. Welcome back.
Oh, thank you. Oops. So, algebra is generalized arithmetic. Students with limited understanding of arithmetic will have great difficulty learning algebra. These students are trapped. Their algebra teachers are also trapped. This produces daily frustration in students, and sometimes this frustration contributes to students acting out inappropriately or even dropping out of school. Even super teachers have great difficulty teaching algebra to students with limited understanding of arithmetic. The students studying Algebra 1 in grade 9 in 2017 presumably were the same students who were taking Math 8 in grade 8 in the previous year. The 1 in 5 Math 8 students who scored proficient on the PARC Math 8 exam probably were the ones who the previous year had scored, the ones who scored proficient on the only 1 in 4 who scored proficient on the PARC Math 8 exam were likely the ones who went on the next year to score to be the only ones who scored proficient on the Algebra 1 exam. Intervention is needed. High school should stretch out Algebra 1 over 3 or 4 semesters for the more than 3 out of 4 grade 9 Algebra 1 students who score less than proficient on the PARC Math 8 exam. This provides teachers and students with the extra time needed to review arithmetic. I live in Prince George's County, and there it's about 5 of 6 grade 8 students who score less than proficient on the PARC Math 8 exam. The Prince George's County school system used to have a 2-year Algebra 1 course. Unfortunately, for many students and their teachers, Prince George's County Schools no longer offers a 2-year Algebra 1 course. And a warning, if the 40% of students scored less than approached the standards on the PARC Algebra 1 test in spring 2017, yet many of them were still promoted to Algebra 2 for the fall. Students with limited understanding of Algebra 1 similarly will have great difficulty learning Algebra 2. Intervention is needed. For such students, high school should stretch Algebra 2 over 3 semesters. Let us not assume that so many students cannot learn algebra. But to be successful, the instructional model has to be changed. And I say that in 3 different ways in this report that I'm giving you. So I'm wearing my Save Prince George's County Public School pen. And I will... As I said last month, the audit found smoke, and now we need an investigation to find fires. And I will second what my elected school board member, Ed Burrows, is about to tell you.
Thank you. We appreciate it. It's a good segue. Next is Edward Burrows. Thank you for being with us. We appreciate it.
Good morning. My name is Edward Burrows. I'm a member of the Prince George's County Board of Education, speaking on behalf of myself today. Boosting the graduation rate was Dr. Maxwell's top achievement as CEO. He, his team, and the county executive paraded across the county, boasting about these rates. We were all ecstatic. Dr. Maxwell received a compensation package of over $450,000, largely based on these rates. We now know that we graduated hundreds of students that didn't meet the requirements for graduation. And in my personal opinion, I believe that every student that was allowed to graduate without meeting basic requirements had their civil rights violated. The report showed that in 2016, 3.6% of students didn't meet the basic requirements in the sample. And then in 2017, that number almost doubled to 6%. The report also showed that students had excessive absences. In 2017, 43.3% of students had excessive absences, which was on page 28 of the report. What the school system would have you believe is that this is nothing more than poor record keeping. I would tell you that forcing teachers to change grades is not poor record keeping. Forcing counselors to stay in buildings to tamper with records a day before the investigators came is not poor record keeping. Graduating students who are truant from school is not poor record keeping. And lowering the bar for our smart and capable and talented students is not poor record keeping. What the board leadership and Dr. Maxwell will have you believe is that no one knew anything about any of this, that somehow in all of these schools we were graduating students that didn't meet the requirements for graduation at the exact same time in the exact same way, and no one knew anything. We now know that that's not true. Right before Christmas, an internal audit surfaced dated May the 4th, 2016, that showed that we were graduating students that did not meet requirements for graduation and that we have poor record keeping. And nothing changed. What I will tell this body, you know, I was one of the original signatories of in the first letter. And I appreciate each of you for voting to have that audit done. What I will tell you is that I still, I know that there is significant information that has already come out and that will continue to come out that will show that not only were we graduating students that didn't meet requirements for graduation, but that high people in the school system at very high levels knew about it and failed to act. I mean, this audit dated May 4th, a year and a half before the Alvarez audit, said we were graduating students that didn't meet the requirements for graduation. And in 2017, we still did it. In fact, the number went up to 6% in the sample size. And so there will be no accountability at the local level. Our board is just not set up like that, unfortunately. You know, we have a very political system with the county executive appointing the superintendent and the board chair. So I ask that the state board look into this more. And if I could just finish my sentence.
Finish your sentence, please.
MSDE came into Prince George's County Public Schools and did an investigation with Dr. Williamson. I asked the superintendent, did you share the existence of this audit that showed that we were graduating students that did not meet the requirements for graduation when Dr. Williamson first came? And the answer was no. So, yeah, and I'll just leave that there.
Yeah, well, thank you. Can you provide all the documentation that you have to Dr. Simpson if you have copies of it?
Sure, Dr.
Who he was speaking for again?
Oh, thank you.
He said himself.
Okay. You're speaking for yourself today?
I am.
Thank you so much. We appreciate your time. There's also, we have one more. Jana Parker, also on the Prince George's County audit. Thank you, Ms. Parker. Welcome.
Thank you. Just for the record, it's pronounced Jana.
I'm sorry, excuse me, Jana Parker.
Jana, yes. I come before you today as a citizen and resident of Prince George's County, as a proud graduate of Prince George's County Public Schools in 2002. And I wanted to express that as a continuing resident, my displeasure and repugnance with the overall governance of Prince George's County Schools as it relates to Dr. Maxwell and his administrative staff. From the standpoint of the things that were brought up just now by Edward Burroughs and the things that continue to come out, when Mr. Burroughs and several other board members went to Governor Hogan and said, hey, this is what's going on in our school system, and this is what's going on based on what teachers and administrators are saying. Dr. Maxwell said in several public interviews that it was political, that these people were lying, that they were muddying the waters and disrespecting teachers within our county. Our county is full of excellent, wonderful, dedicated teachers. And that audit did not find that they were the ones that were tampering with the grades. And I think it was inappropriate for him to imply that when a year before Mr. Burroughs and the several other board members stated that there was issues, he and his executive staff already knew because they had did their own internal audit. From the standpoint of a resident who pays taxes, it was irritating and frustrating to me to have known that there was an internal audit done by our own school system, and then county residents then had to absorb the cost of another external audit done when you already knew the findings of that audit. There is a bill, HB 1107, and it's in the legislation, and this body I don't think can speak to that, but I just wanted to give a little bit of clarification. That bill within Prince George's County allows for the county executive to pick our appoint board members, as well as pick our appointed chair, as well as pick the CEO. And yes, there is a reference to political activities and how they affect the governance of the school system. I think that you can't separate the two. You can't say, well, we're about the children and not acknowledge that these things are going on that affect the children. The fact that our county executive appointed his brother-in-law as the chair of our board and then voted or appointed our CEO. And then that board with the four appointed members voted in March to give our CEO a $400,000 benefits package, while several of the teachers that he was touting in the media, about 1,100 at least, were on administrative leave and were coming to the board consistently asking for them to be put on their proper steps. All those teachers that he's talking about are actually going to retire about $10,000 behind because we have money to pay for him and his executive staff, but we don't have money to pay for those teachers, which I find to be interesting. I just want there to be clarification and transparency in relation to everything that's going on within Prince George's County. And for this board, as well as any other boards, to be able to speak to all parts of it and how it affects our students in the county. And those are really serious issues. And that's pretty much what I wanted to say. It's the way that it's being ran is just repugnant, disgusting. And I wanted to make sure I stated that here.
Thank you for your time.
You're welcome.
We appreciate it. Okay.